Hello, everyone, and welcome to the LIBF Banking and Finance Podcast. My name is John Somerville, Head of Financial Services, and I'm joined again by Steve Whitten, Adrian Daly, and Joe Davis. We've just completed the webinar for professionalizing the motor industry, and we ended up with so many questions. We're putting together this short podcast to really cover off some of those extra questions that we just couldn't get to, really. And it wasn't because Adrian was talking too much, was it, Joe? It was just purely and simply, not that he's known. No, absolutely not. No, sorry, you can tell.
It was perfect, Adrian, actually. I thought it was extremely good.
And actually, before we get into the questions, we were just commenting just actually before we started recording this, how, you know, because it's such a great cross section of the industry that we have represented on that webinar. I think, you know, I'm hoping that everybody on the webinar got a huge, I did certainly, you know, and I'm not a motor finance professional, but I recognize all of those factors that make a really solid business move forward. And I think that's the most critical bit, really, Adrian. What do you think? You know, it's just such an important aspect of professionalizing the industry, education, TNC, learning, and also looking after your people, Steve. That's another thing, you know, looking after them properly, thinking about their welfare is just such a huge and important factor. And that's why I thought this just came together just perfectly, really. It's almost like we planned it, really. It's a bit strange, but there you go. So anyway, I'm going to crack on with some of these questions, if that's all right with you guys. And the first one is from Ian Dunap. And he asked the question, doing the right thing via training is, of course, a foundation. I think we're all in agreement. I think everybody knows where we are with that. And I totally agree with you, Ian, on that. But what progress are we seeing in the ability to record and substantiate compliance steps so that when called upon, there is evidence at a customer level of compliance? And I think this probably sits more with Joe than anything else, actually, this particular question. What do you think on that, Joe?
I don't think we're there yet as an industry. I still think we're working on our systems controls around making sure that we're evidencing. There is a lot of work on having, you know, very good internal systems as well as the online systems. But I think we're getting there. I think the most important thing is we recognise as an industry within the dealerships as well as the finance companies how important it is. And I think I would agree. I don't think we're there yet, but I think it's something that we really do need to perfect. And because how else are we going to demonstrate compliance? And I think that creep of that consumer duty coming in soon as well, where, you know, you're able to actually have potentially a fiduciary duty, a consumer having a right of action. You are going to want to make sure that you're evidencing even more. I think we need a bit of work yet still to do. I'd actually think Adrian quite good to comment on that as well in terms of what he's seen within his membership on that. But I still think it's work in progress.
Adrian?
Very much agree with that, Joe. I think just picking up other questions that were related to that about, okay, that's okay in a franchise dealer context, but what about a small independent dealer? And I think there's a number of questions in there where I think we have to recognise that what good looks like in that context will be different to what we've built so far. We will need to be build something specific. And what picking up what you said there, Joe, it has to be partly a partnership approach. So one of the questions there came from a very good finance company that has just that relationship with its independent dealers, and high quality conversations take place both in the finance company and in the dealership. It is possible. We've just got to define it and embed it.
I think this collaboration, John, is working well. I think as soon as we get the lenders collaborating a lot more with those that are selling their financial products, because they are putting them in charge of selling their financial services products. And just by that, there has to be this better collaboration on good performance, what good looks like, and ensuring that that's that evidencing all round. And I think it's getting a lot better because it's not just about selling cars anymore, is it? It's about selling the financial product as well. Yeah.
Very much so. And I think that's the thing, you know, how things are evolving. I mean, just perspective, in, you know, where I come from, it is, you know, it's become confusing. It's become in some respects, you know, a vast array of products. You know, when you think 20, 30 years ago, it wasn't. It was a bank loan or it's finance and that was it, you know, and now here we are, you know, several years later. And some people haven't moved with that really, have they? You know, so it's, you know, it's interesting. And now we're talking about electric cars being treated like mobile phones, effectively, okay. Sort of leasing these things. And these are new options that consumers, you know, what you mean, I'll never own the car. And that's a big thing to get around, get their heads around. But it's the right outcome from the consumer that they, you know, if that's the right thing for them, then fantastic. I'm going to move to a question now for Steve, actually. There's been a few that's come in for you, Steve, and it came in right at the end, as you can imagine, because you were the last one to speak, unfortunately. But obviously, this gives us an opportunity to really sort of hear some of your thoughts. And Steve Stansfield asked an interesting question to begin with, which was a key point is the culture of the organization. And this is very much driven from the top down, which we've already mentioned and discussed. But an interesting question is, how can this best be influenced, as in for the better? How can the top down, how can the management of companies now be influenced to improve things for the general well-being of everybody?
Wow, what a question. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, it's got to be their idea, it's got to be their decision, and I think, you know, this sort of stuff sort of sits at the heart of what they're doing, and you know, that's about attitudes, it's about beliefs. And certainly, you know, when just from our example, when we're working with someone, you know, we're very, very clear to them when we say, this sits with you, you're the CEO, you're the MD, this is your issue, your problem, your challenge, you know, it sits with you. The minute you think that you can put us in a box and fob us off to HR or marketing or the training department, then it's conversation over. And I think what we're noticing is that there is a real difference. You know, we're working with dealer groups who've come forward and gone, yeah, this, you know, despite the fact how big we are, we have a family values type of orientation. Our ethos is all about the people of the business, because the people in the business give the customers the right outcomes. And by comparison, we've got other, you know, not just PLCs, but some of the smaller independents as well, who have, you know, have actually said, no, I'm not interested. This isn't for us, you know, because they're in that very much kind of fix it, I'll do what I have to do to get away with it mentality. And so I think really it's about, for us, it's about creating a groundswell, you know, and creating a groundswell from the people at the front line doing this stuff, and the people in businesses, and getting the rest of the industry going, yeah, actually, that's a really good point, you know.
Well, I'm sure you can probably think of several businesses out there where you have seen the top-down approach being right, mm-hmm. and those are the businesses that are succeeding. And I guess, Adrian, you'd probably agree with that, you know, where you've seen a lot of these businesses being absolutely front and centre, and actually, the thing is, if you those are the businesses that people want to aspire to go and work for, aren't they? That's the critical thing. And I think a lot of other smaller businesses don't embrace that, don't really miss the point, really, or don't see that, you know, and, you know, really need to get onto that train of thought, I suspect. So that's something. And interestingly, that just brings me on to the next question from Robert Ashby. One of the big challenges in recruiting a more diverse workforce seems to be remuneration and hours. So time and money, basically, which has come up a couple of times in our conversations. How can that be worked on to improve colleagues' experience of roles? So that, I mean, this is another massive question. I guess I'll direct that to Steve to begin with. Have you had any, have you come across those sorts of challenges on diversity?
Just remind me of the question again.
I do apologize, Steve. Yes. Yeah, right. So one of the big challenges in recruiting a more diverse workforce seems to be remuneration and hours. How can that be worked upon to improve colleague experience of the role?
Well, firstly, I would say, yes, it is about those two things, you know, remuneration and hours. But actually, there's a third element, and it's attitude.
Okay.
What the industry has typically done is and I make no apologies for saying this, there is a whole bunch of managers that have been over-promoted and underdeveloped. And as a result, their own lack of self-confidence, lack of self-belief, imposter syndrome, or whatever else they're suffering from, causes them to recruit in their own likeness. And as a prop, what we end up with then is that we you know, the badge of honor in the industry is somebody who has on their CV that they've moved from dealership to dealership to dealership over a period of years. And, you know, I had a conversation yesterday with a recruitment manager for a dealer group who said they are just about to break the mold and go out to retail and to airlines. But they've had an uphill struggle with their senior management to say, look, this person who was just been made redundant as a cabin crew member from an airline that's you know, struggling, would give fantastic customer service and we should bring them in. But the senior management have gone, yeah, but what do they know about the motor industry? When I've got a line of people who have gone from dealership to dealership that are queuing up to come and work here. So, you know, it is about money and the hours, but it's also largely about attitudes, and it's about management having the confidence and the self-belief to be able to say, I'm prepared to take a leap of faith and take on that risky hire rather than the so-called safe pair of hands. That, by the way, the safe pair of hands is probably going to leave in 6 months' time.
Which is crazy, isn't it? And I, interestingly, we've had experience of all of those people in the airline industry recently taking our qualifications, as it happens, without going into too much detail. And I can absolutely assure anybody who is thinking about recruiting somebody from that industry into this one, you are doing the right thing. These people are high quality and actually have consumers at the number one. Absolutely, you can imagine if you're a pilot, for instance, you know, the safety of everybody around you is number one. But it's the same with the cabin crew, and they want the best experience for everybody. But also at the same time, they will follow the rules to the utmost degree. And I think that's a really strong point, Steve, actually. It's that if you can just break out of that cycle of, well, I'll go for the next salesman, who is going to leave in 6 months, and you know they're going to leave in 6 months, but mould somebody who you really think will do a good job for you. I think that's a tremendous answer. Thanks for that, Steve. Really appreciate it.
From a money point of view, those ex-airline staff are not accustomed to earning massive amounts of money either. You know, so
that is very, very true, especially cabin crew, interestingly. You know, that it's not as highly paid as everybody may think, and yes, interesting point of view, definitely. So we've got another question here, which I think is pretty much to everybody, really. We'll see who wants to take this one. If it's from Caroline Ireland, if the fundamental issue is a lack of customer understanding of financial products and processes, at what time does the two-pronged attack and teaching the responsible use of credit have a place in the national curriculum? Which actually, Caroline, it actually does, and it is in the national curriculum, interestingly. But we're talking about teaching this from a school age point of view. I think the two things for me is school age, but also there's a huge amount of the public who are there now who need educating. Has anybody got any thoughts on that? Oh, Adrian, you're on mute. I'm so sorry.
Sorry about that. But yes, Caroline hit a nail on the head there. Of course, we can take responsibility for what we are responsible for, which is the ethical, effective sale of motor finance products. We own that, have to own it. But a market works well when the consumer is engaged as well. And whether we like it or not, in finance of any kind, we are in a David and Goliath situation. You know, there is what regulators rightly call information asymmetry between us and our customers. And that has to be redressed. We can take responsibility for improving our part of it. But, you know, more educated customers from a young age really, really matter. You know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and the national curriculum certainly wasn't built in a day. But there are tools out there. You know, you've got the FLA's Financing Your Car part of our website, which is intended to, you know, fill that gap right now about walking customers in their own time through what the different finance products are and what's the best one for them. So, and there are lots of other examples that are in that space as well. So, you know, there are things we can do as trade bodies and as companies to help inform the customer. Worth noting that the FCA's current consultation on a new consumer duty plays huge emphasis on customer information. As well as being part of a good customer journey as well. But yes, ultimately, as a father of two teenage sons, it has surprised me how little They've been there's a discussion about adult commercial life comes up on the national curriculum in England, but yes, hopefully that will change.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting, really. I can give a little bit of experience from our point of view. We operate a schools program at the LIBF. And worth visiting our website, actually, Caroline and anybody else that's interested. We run things called the LIFE program, which is learning in financial education, designed for school kids. But we run qualifications from GCSE level through to A level. And unfortunately, it's down to budgets. You know, school budgets are what they are. The programmes are there, but obviously they need to buy them. And also they need to think a long way ahead. If you can imagine, if somebody's going to buy a qualification, they need to think for the next year or the year after and then put it in place for them. And then they've got to get all the notes and what have you. And so it's a long old process. And of course, interestingly, there are a lot of schools in the UK and each one of them is managing their own budget. So it makes life really, really difficult on the financial education side. But spread the word, really, that's all I'll say. You know, we get to as many schools as we can, and certainly as an education provider, you know, it's certainly worthwhile spreading the word that those qualifications do exist. And wouldn't it be great if everybody came out of school, knew what a mortgage was, a pension was, knew how to service their credit card and actually buy their car? Well, you know, God, that would make life very easy from everybody's point of view, from consumers in the UK, and we all know this, but unfortunately it just sort of doesn't reciprocate, and you know, so it's challenging to say the least. We have another question from Rhys Andrews, noting the requirements for FLA members to only work with SAF approved or equivalent training, franchised and independent dealers in 2023 and 25 respectively. How does the FLA envisage this is communicated to dealers? For instance, will there be some form of communications campaign? So I guess this one sits squarely with Adrian, I'm afraid. So Adrian, have you got an answer for that one for Rhys?
Yes, completely. What Rhys says there, we've obviously been talking very closely to the trade bodies that represent the dealers concerned, who are fully aware of this. And we've got a job, especially in the next 5 years with independent dealers, or 4 years rather. We've not only got to communicate with independent dealers, we've got to give them the tools to get there as well, which, as we were saying earlier, does involve looking differently at what good looks like, which involves, as it were, with Reese's own company, independent dealers working with finance companies that can support them in this journey. It's a partnership approach, and we've got to define that and embed it.
Perfect. Thanks for that. Now, would you believe we've come to the end of all our questions, which I'm sorry to say, actually, because I'm really enjoying this. So there's so much to talk about. And, you know, it has been very enjoyable from our point of view. We've loved hosting you all, and really looking forward to the next one, actually, guys. So, you know, we'd welcome you back wholeheartedly. Is there anything else? Have anybody got any closing comments about what you've sort of, apart from experiencing this today, you know, how you know, messages for the people who have attended today, anything that you'd like to sort of get across to them? I see Steve's come off mute, actually, so I'm going to go to Steve first.
Yeah, I was just, having recently had some experience of putting myself back out into the market and trying to get a mortgage, and being on the receiving end of the way that, you know, mortgage advisors that you've never met sort of phone you up and the process that they go through, I actually think that despite my, you know, apparent cynicism at times, that not only are we in the automotive industry perhaps a little bit further ahead than we give ourselves credit for by comparison, but I think that we've also got all the raw ingredients that we need to be amazing. You know, I mean, we've got the will for a start, you know, and I got a call on Sunday afternoon from a mortgage advisor, and there was no mention of FCA or regulatory stuff at all. It was just purely, you know, run me through a dozen questions to check whether I was eligible for a mortgage before he'd even enter into a conversation. And I come off the call and I thought, I'm not sure it's meant to happen quite like that.
That's disappointing, Steve. Yes.
Yeah, no, I know. So I just wanted to say, you know, if you're in the automotive industry, all is not lost. Mm. We have some fantastic stuff going on, and you know, it's great to be a part of this panel and, you know, see how that develops.
Oh, thanks for that, Steve. Joe, your last thoughts?
Yeah, for me, I think it's the focus on culture. You know, some takeaways. I do think there's quite a lot of work to do. And it's not just about the top down. It's also about, you know, the new conduct rules are really around all staff, isn't it, that are working in financial services, to ensure that, you know, they're embracing good culture. It's so important, and the senior managers regime. And there are, if you watch and you listen to, you know, quite a lot of the FCA's talks, the focus on culture, you know, and they've even got a set of questions that they're expecting firms to actually ask themselves as an exercise. And, you know, I would really, really encourage people to you know, focus on culture. The customer outcomes is hugely important, and that the new consumer duty, it's now linking more of the importance of good customer outcomes. TCF and, you know, vulnerability, they're still massively important to get right. And I think that we've got some work to do. And I was really impressed, actually, when Steve was talking about some of the areas still where, you know, even now, we still not seem to be embracing the culture that we want to see. And Steve's point on that, I have to say, I thought was really, really good, about we have to embrace good culture. It's massively important. And incentive schemes, we need to have a look at those, don't we, again, in the dealerships. In terms of internal incentives, you know, we've worked really hard, haven't we, on new commission arrangements, and we've worked hard, and we're about to see some monitoring around that soon from the FCA about how we've embedded the new ones. But in internal incentives as well, we've really got to have a look at that, because I really think that, you know, they're not being just measured on sales, rather than having other measures in place, is going to build a better culture, stop people leaving so quickly, and you know, all around, that is going to create better customer outcomes, because their focus is going to be about getting the customer in the right car and the right product, rather than reaching my sales targets. It's got to be about reaching a good customer outcome for me.
Perfect, thanks for that. And finally, Adrian, some closing words from you maybe.
Yeah, I just briefly say, echo everything that Steve and Joe have said there. Ultimately, very much agree that as an industry, we have all the right building blocks already in place with who's here and what we're here to do. Ultimately, you know, tens of millions of people in the UK require a vehicle for their mobility in order to access society, to access employment. And most of those need finance to acquire that mobility. And, you know, therefore, what we do is absolutely essential for society. It's an essential public good. And also all the businesses in the industry who are there to service that need, they need happy customers. It's as simple as that. So we have all the building blocks in place for a very successful, sustainable future. And I think professionalism is absolutely the heart of that.
Definitely. And I think I'm just reflecting on something Steve said a minute ago, which is, you know, the mortgage advice that you mentioned earlier on. And I think, well, actually, you know, you think about how difficult the job is for anybody in car sales, because they're effectively mortgage advisor and estate agent all in one, if that makes sense. So they're doing both jobs there. And so it shouldn't be underestimated what they have to go through, the level of knowledge, both for the finance product and the car itself, and what they're actually going through there. And I appreciate, you know, but you've got to remember, this is the second biggest purchase that anybody will make, next to their home. You know, and the home takes a considerable number of people to take them through a process. So that includes solicitors, surveyors, conveyancing, all this stuff. And it's a big chain of events that go along to make that happen. With a car dealership, you're talking to effectively one person in the majority of cases. I'm sure there's others that get involved. And obviously behind the scenes, you've got people who are making the transactions. But what a difficult job it is, actually, when you reflect on all the different nuances. And not only that, but the car technology changes every day. So, you know, your house pretty much stays the same, bricks and mortar and roof and central heating and all the rest of it. But now, you know, okay, you get a new different sort of hide or whatever. But the car, my God. Today's car, I mean, I'm 51 and I'm fuddy-duddy these days, and I just look at the technology thing, I just want to drive the thing. But there's a lot in there, isn't there? There's a huge amount going
absolutely
on.
Absolutely. It's a lot of responsibility and a lot of things to think about, and all the regulatory requirements around cars, getting them in the right car for them that fits exactly their purpose. and then finding the right finance product that fits the product, their purpose. And they're not easy products, are they? They're quite complex products. You know, the hire purchase PCP, you know, or is it PCH? They are complex products. And if you've got all of them available and trying to explain, you know, trying to work out which one's best, because a customer comes in without any clue and never had experience of car finance before, you've also got to go through all the suitability and find them the right finance product, which is, it's a big task. So
it's, yeah, mind-blowing.
And so to be able to help them genuinely and help them and enable them to be able to perfect that customer journey is the key to all of this. And I do think that the SAF program is really, really good. And I would really encourage more to use it, because it is such a good way of learning and developing and training.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, we're obviously involved with the SAF program collaboratively with the FLA, and I know what a difference it makes.
And I think if we can change that culture, which was what Steve was saying, isn't it? And free up people with more time. And then maybe if we can change the culture so that we're not focusing on all about sales targets, so then we're not losing people. All of that change in culture automatically shifts to having more time to do the training. And if we can address those, we're going to get more people of being able to have the time to enroll on the SAF programs. And then that investment in people, you know, why don't you have your dealer principal investing in people to do this? Because it means that they're going to create better quality sales, which actually at the end of the day is where you bring your customer back, because they trust you. And so it's getting that circle, isn't it? It's not rocket science, but it is a complex journey without a shadow of a doubt. And the training and the SAF program, I just think it's excellent. I just think, do it. It's perfect. Just do it. Go for it.
Thank you. And you're right. You know, it's make the change, make the cultural shift. Do what you've got to get the outcomes. That's the most, you know, that's the great message. I think I've heard education and culture hand in hand here. I think that's been absolutely tremendous. So thank you so much for your time this afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure hosting this. I've really had some fun you know, fielding these questions on behalf of everybody, and you know, and learning a hell of a lot myself as well, interestingly, but actually a lot of similarities with other financial services as well. But thank you so much for that. So I basically thank you to everybody that's listened to the podcast. I hope you found it useful today. And if you want to hear more content from us, then visit the website at the LIBF, and we will be, you know, there's plenty of content out there, things like DSM and CR webinars that we're running, obviously the webinar we've just run with Adrian, Steve and Joe. But for me and the team here, a very pleasant afternoon to everybody, and thank you all for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to find out more about our qualifications, training and upcoming events, then go to libf.ac.uk. We also have other podcast channels that dive into topics like trade finance, financial advice, fintech, and more. You can find all of them at libf.ac.uk/podcasts.